Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part. I'm your host, Vincent Trewell. I have a very special guest tonight, Aaron Gullius. He is a professional historian. He both teaches history at a college level and researches at a highly professional level. He's written several books and is most out there publicly as the host of an excellent podcast called The Saucer Life. Welcome aboard, Aaron.
Hi, thank you. Yes, glad to be here.
Yes, so I'm really looking forward to talking with you about a number of things tonight. I recently attended the Strange Reality Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, which is organized and operated by Adam Sane and Surfeil Stevenson of the Conspiranormal podcast. And I think you will agree it was awesome.
Yes, it was.
You were a presenter, albeit virtually, but hey, made an awesome presentation.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Yes. Could you tell listeners who might not have heard it a little bit about what she had to say?
For the last gosh, couple years, I've been really interested in some of the local angles of early UFO flying saucer history here in Southeast Michigan. I'm about an hour north of Detroit, and one of the groups that I find very interesting is the Detroit Flying Saucer Club, which I first heard about years and years ago working on the podcast, and then subsequently have found FBI files about them and some other things that members of the organization have written and newspaper articles. And so I talked about that organization as being kind of a microcosm of sort of UFO belief in the 1950s, because there were a variety of different opinions. The leadership of the organization was very much sort of on board with contacteeism. They brought George Adamski to Detroit to speak numerous times. At one of his appearances, they drew about 4,000 people to the big Masonic temple in downtown Detroit to hear crazy old George Adamski talk about Venus and the Space Brothers. They brought George Hunt Williamson. They brought Truman Bethlehem and Buck Nelson and everything. So they were active in bringing speakers to Detroit. They had numerous groups that met in homes throughout the city and out in the suburbs. And then they sort of fell apart. And the difference of opinion that sort of drove this wedge between them was the question of whether or not to accept messages from the Space Brothers that were telepathic rather than physical contacts, which is a big split in the wider contactee world, as some people talking about flying on flying saucers with them, and other people talking about channeling messages from, Ashtar or Na 9 of the Solar X group or whatever. So that organization sort of fell apart, but it's fascinating because there's the people who were involved, they were, I don't want to, I'm trying to think of how to say this. They weren't people who were out on the fringe, They were retired engineers and middle class housewives and people who worked in business. And they were very, in a lot of ways, very typical sort of middle class, white, urban, suburban 1950s people. And they were older. They were all in their 40s and 50s and older than that. And it's an interesting group, and the FBI would be tipped off that they were, saying things that might be un-American or subversive. So the FBI, which has an office in Detroit, so it wasn't like they were, sending people a long way, but they did have informants who would tell them about the meetings. You had people writing to J. Edgar Hoover, because when you have an issue, that's what you do. You write to the head of the FBI, not your local office. You go right to the top.
If you hadn't brought it up, I was going to bring it up that yes, a ridiculously large number of people reported them directly to J. Edgar Hoover.
It's and they would ask questions like, "Do you know anything about Truman Bethlen and his book? Because I think some of the ideas he has in there might be, friendly to the communists." And Hoover would write back, a form letter saying basically, even if we generally do not study individual flying saucer people, even if we did, we would not be able to share that information with you, which is, the right answer. But it's what's fascinating to me about this is that the FBI files, consist a lot of people writing in, reporting things they hear in the meetings, concerns about nuclear war, thinking that's a bad thing, right? Issues of war and peace, and these are interpreted as un-American. They were bad-mouthing atomic bombs. Is that legal? So it's this very, very, very sort of emblematic of the Red Scare. And the FBI generally, I don't want to say they didn't care. I mean, they cared enough to open files and keep up correspondence with people and things like that. But they did not really find anything that they felt was worth pursuing as a criminal matter, in Detroit. The closest they got to it was, there was a person who was claiming they were working with the FBI on the flying saucer issue, and this person was not. And so the FBI did bring that person in, sort of sat them down and said, "Look, you can't do that. You can't sort of pretend you're work tell people you're working for the FBI. That's a no-no. And honestly, even if he was working with the FBI, he probably shouldn't be telling people he was working with the FBI." So it's really interesting. There's one woman who's involved named Laura Mundo, and
Thank you. I was going to have to bring her up if you didn't.
she's my favorite. And what's amazing is there are other people now who have gotten into Laura Mundo, and there's a guy with a blog where he's like digging up Laura Mundo stuff, and through a relative he got like her sort of fictionalized memoir. Actually a relative of hers got in touch with me and sent me a copy of it, and I haven't gone through it yet because it's not scanned. It's like camera photos of like each page. So
Oh,
it's
joy.
yeah it's I might need to do some cropping over the semester break and make it a little more readable. But it's really interesting because she was very close with Adamski, with George Adamski. She was one of the people in charge of the organization who set up these meetings and these lectures, that's the word, lectures that he set up. And she would talk about how he behaved very inappropriately towards her, groping and comments and things. But she this is the strangest thing. She said it was okay because he only did that in front of other people. When we were alone, he never tried to take advantage of me. But he did it in front of other people to see what I would do. And since I didn't do anything, he knew that he could trust me, which does not sound healthy, really,
No, it
at
does
all.
not.
But she would have a sort of falling out with Adamski over the psychic downloads from the aliens versus physical contact with them. But she would also refer to him as her god. But yeah, it's wild. But also she refers to him as Lucifer as one at one point. But from the
Joy.
con yeah, right? Which is he? Both kind of, because in the context it was sort of Lucifer as this enlightened one sort of idea rather than any sort of satanic kind
A
of thing.
Promethean
Yeah.
entity bringing liberty to the people.
Yeah, bringing knowledge and ways to help people up to the next level. And she would continue writing about UFOs in her own newsletter and in local newspapers up until the 1980s. She passed away in 1989 or so. Think she still has some children and grandchildren in the area. I might be doing some more looking into the Detroit Saucer Club, just seeing if I can get down there and find any, I don't know, documentation or more records or things that might not be online. But in a very large nutshell, that's what I sort of talked about was the Detroit Flying Saucer Club as a sort of representation of the wider saucer scene, sort of a street level view of what saucer believers were doing back in the 50s in a place that wasn't Giant Rock and wasn't, LA or anywhere else.
That was very much the heartland, and yeah, I mean, it's a big city, but it's still, it's very Midwestern, and yeah, that is fascinating. How much of a religious aspect would you say was there to that movement?
I think there was quite a bit of a religious or spiritualist element to it. Some of the people involved in the Flying Saucer Club, a guy named Henry Maday, for example, he was also active since the 1940s in running a sort of spiritualist discussion group in Detroit. And so the contactee stuff with its connections to earlier schools of thought like theosophy and the IM movement, there's significant overlap with those things. It's sort of a natural kind of transition from thinking about ascended masters to thinking about ascended masters in space, right?
Yes, indeed.
excuse me. There is that religious and spiritual element to it. Jesus was one of the people who was up with with Ashtar's fleet protecting the Earth. I'm sorry.
No, no problem. You've probably been doing a lot of talking today.
But I got to give exams too, so that was easy. So there are those religious elements. There's also in the early Flying Saucer movement, there's also a sense of determining what the U reality of the UFOs would mean for organized religion, for traditional religions. And that is a question that appeared in many different forums. And one of the places I remember it showing up is Gray Barker's book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers. Because there was some speculation that the three men in black who visited Al Bender could have been clergy, trying
Wow.
to shut him up and prevent a breakdown of religion or religious belief systems. And I always thought that was interesting because religion of all kinds has survived countless advances in knowledge since the dawn of humanity. And I think most religious systems would be flexible enough to incorporate extraterrestrial intelligence into how they view things. But it was a real concern. Especially back in the 1950s, when religion and specifically this sort of new phrase that turns up in the 50s, the Judeo-Christian religion, was seen not just in terms of religious doctrine and belief and faith, but also as one of the sort of pillars of American society, which differentiated us from the atheistic communists, right? So we put In God We
Godless
Trust on the
commies,
music.
yes.
And we put under God in the pledge, and we invent a term Judeo-Christian to sort of encompass sort of Western religion, Christianity and Judaism. And so things that would be a challenge to that were viewed with suspicion. So both in the sense that that early UFO believers, especially those who followed the contactee movement, were so many of them came from a spiritualist background. There's that aspect, but there's also the concern and suspicion that if real, the UFOs could, undermine traditional religious belief in the United States.
Yes, and I know that was a big concern. And I've never really gotten why, let's say there were Martians. Okay, there's Martians. God couldn't have created the Martians too?
Right. Yeah.
And the Catholic Church has handled this. The Pope, the current Pope, has made the statement that if an alien comes here and raises a tentacle, and that was his phrase, okay, raises a tentacle and says, I want to be baptized, I will baptize him. Yes. Why, if there's billions and billions of planets out there, why would God only have put life on this one? I mean, that makes like zero sense to me, you know?
I remember. I remember when I was in 8th grade in confirmation class in my little Lutheran school. The pastor on Fridays, we could ask him any questions, right? And so I asked, "Well, what about aliens?" When I was in 8th grade, he discussed it pretty reasonably and thoughfully, and I always appreciated that. Okay, my water has arrived, so hopefully that will help my throat. So I don't see any conflict between really any religious school of thought and the sort of concept of intelligent life on other planets. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And I
Exactly.
don't.
I've never really seen why that's that big a problem, but it has been referred to incessantly for decades, you know?
Yeah, and one of the things that we see a lot of now, well, the last, I think really the last 20 years especially, is this explosion in on the evangelical side of things, especially sort of like connecting anything paranormal to the demonic. And
Yes.
I think it's a way to get clicks. I think
Yes.
one of the things, Serfiel actually from Strange Realities actually got me into a Christian Bigfoot group on Facebook. And it's a weird group. It's a weird Facebook group. There's this sort of vibe of, we are going to believe everything anyone says about an encounter they have, and then we will explain why it's demonic. And we
Yes,
it's like,
I.
this is this video of Bigfoot? No, it's video of a demon. It's like, it's not a video of anything. Calm down.
Yes, I lurk in several similar type sites where I don't argue with anybody. I just listen to what they have to say, but what they have to say makes zero sense to me
It
because the
really
devil has nothing better to do than play act being a big ape in the woods, you know?
Yeah, it's very strange. It's a little amusing. It's often really coloring outside the lines of actual Christian doctrine. It's like, yeah, I don't think this is part of historical church teachings here. Your
Oh, no, not at all.
marine spirits of the depths being responsible for shipwrecks or whatever. But charmingly, I think the group I'm in, about half the posts are basically prayer requests, which is nice. I like that. That's wholesome. But it really is interesting, this overlap between religion and ufology. I can see other paranormal things being more sort of concerning to Christians who are concerned about those sorts of things. Things like ghosts. I think ghosts, spirits of the dead, there's some pretty careful prohibitions about that in the Bible.
That has some theology behind it, absolutely.
Communicating with the dead is not a great thing. But aliens, I mean, they don't even they're no, they're not in there. It's to come up with sort of biblical prohibitions on aliens is really stretching some things even further out of context than some people do normally.
Well, yes, when the Bible was written, which is thousands of years after a lot of the stuff described happened or may have happened or have what have you, they didn't know that we're in a galaxy.
No.
They scarcely knew about the solar system, and nothing, really contradicts that in the Bible, it doesn't.
There's, I think, in some in the sort of UFO religion circles, I think there's some real need to return to looking at ancient texts and even medieval texts as, as within their actual historical context. And within that world, what would this writer have been actually thinking about and talking about? It's probably not flying craft from space. Ezekiel's wheel was not a flying saucer.
A bold statement, sir.
I don't know what it was. Well, I mean, technically, literal sense, yes, it was circular, and it was circular. But yeah, that doesn't mean it's an alien craft. It might be similar to what some people are seeing, but again, there you've got the sort of divide between, the extraterrestrial explanation and other theories about what UFOs might be. And we always say that as though there's only one thing they might be, right? That's sort of like the default way we talk about it. But really, it's what's a UFO? Well, there's about eight different
Well,
things
I
it could be.
absolutely believe that's an umbrella term that covers at least several different experiences.
It's and it's not to get all sort of 1970s, and they're all maybe manifestations of the same basic experience that just show up in different ways at different times. So, they can be UFOs or ghosts or cryptids or what have you, and your John Keelian, thin areas where stuff from elsewhere shows up, which honestly, I like that explanation. I think that's it's the most entertaining one for
Oh,
me to
as do I. Yeah,
sort
I'm
of
a keel
entertain.
head, man. Yeah.
It's much more satisfying to think about than aliens. I until
Well,
like yeah.
and Keel famously totally disregarded Roswell and just thought Roswell was BS. And I concur. I think you do too. That there are so many mundane. Now they might be very bad, and they might be a lot of things that the government might be doing, but Roswell almost certainly was not a crashed alien ship.
No, I don't know what it was, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't that. And the thing about Roswell is, at this point, I think the waters are so muddied that I don't know if we'll ever get a good explanation as to what happened there. Because it's, and even if we did, if somehow we uncover some documents, there's rock solid documented evidence that this was some sort of top secret thing, maybe even different than all the top secret things people have already said it could be. If we had like open and shut case to the people who take Roswell as the foundational event of modern ufology, it wouldn't matter. I mean, that evidence is clearly manufactured and hoaxed, and they're trying to prevent disclosure and blah blah blah, and we need congressional hearings, and we need to vote out the Congress people who don't vote for this, that, or the other amendment because, I think people are, some people are just so locked in to their favored explanation of Roswell or of anything else that that evidence and proof and even alternative theories just don't, they just don't sink in. It's all
Oh
just de
yes, there's
all,
a
it's all
real
debunked.
bias that no, this is the deal. And that's unfortunately mostly a product of fictional pop culture stuff
Yeah.
like the X-Files and Dark Skies and things like that than it is of anything that historically happened.
Yeah. Dark Skies. I mean, it's amazing how much impact Dark Skies has had, considering that nobody watched it really at the time. And I don't know. I just want to sort of like just tell people, look, Dark Skies was not a documentary. This is fiction. But now you have one of the creators of the show out very sort of loudly talking about disclosure and what we know and what we need to find out. And so the lines kind of blur there. It's like, oh, was Dark Skies his way of trying to get this information out? No, Dark Skies fueled his interest in this topic, which he now talks about all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, I
And as a number of people have noted, this is not a new thing. The crashed saucer narrative has been going on for at least 70 years.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it. I did. Nathan Isaacs did a fascinating Liminal Lodge episode. I think it was the last one. I think it was last week, so you probably may not have heard of it.
No, I haven't.
He went through the history of Lockheed Martin and the history of Area 51
Oh,
and
interesting.
all the incredible, real, but totally acknowledged to be real aircraft that were totally human built. Nothing, no aliens, no, none of that, at Area 51. And included like drones back in the 70s. And it included in the late 60s, early 70s, I forget the exact year, a plane that could fly over 4,000 miles an hour. Yes, they did some
Wow.
fantastic things. And I've always kind of felt that the big secret of disclosure might be there never were any crash ships or anything, that we just built all this really cool stuff and we use that to kind of camouflage that, smoke screen that. So you don't know exactly what cool stuff we're doing now because we're making even better things. They built the U-2 spy planes there. They built the stealth bomber there. And maybe the big secret is this has always been distraction. Look at those aliens. Oh my God, they're aliens. And we're really making this stuff ourselves. Because there's a clear progression from the Wright brothers, to the stealth bomber, that it's step by step. It's not some sudden giant leap forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really any place for mysterious gaps in our development of technology in the 20th century. And I'm always thinking about that Philip Corso's Day After Roswell book, where he talks about how everything from microchips to fiber optic cable was the result of back-engineered alien technology. And it's like, no, you can go to the corporate archives of the Corning Glass Company and see how they developed fiber optic cable. Nobody was tipped off, and in the fall of 47, hey, we got some great stuff from a spaceship. Now make pink insulation or something. It just, yeah, it doesn't. It makes much more sense that our government and other governments around the world have been developing technologies that are far in advance of what's publicly known, and that these things would appear otherworldly to some observers. I think that makes sense. And we see things like the whole Benowitz deal back in the 80s. The Air Force was happy to disinform this guy for a long period of time to protect experiments and technology down in New Mexico, and they used him to sort of disseminate and build this whole mythology of alien-human interaction that informs the so-called discourse to this day.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of people, that are getting, this has happened like the fifth wave of that same story. I think a lot of those people are very sincere and they believe what they've been told, but they're getting Linda Moulton Howe, you might say. She wasn't an idiot. She was
No.
a highly, acknowledged journalist. She was a pro and she'd done some great work. And then, I mean, I would fall for it too if I didn't, know everything else that had happened. You know, the feds call you into the office and tell you, okay, we're going to let you know, but you got to keep it secret for right now. Aliens are real. And this is, they're taking these cows and they're mutilating them.
Yeah.
And, the temptation to totally believe that and put out their propaganda is enormous. And I probably would have gone for it too, you know?
You know, I wouldn't, I would not want to steadfastly declare that I never would have fallen for it. I never would have gone along with it. I never would have been like Bill Moore. I never would have, manipulated a guy and given him bad information on the promise that I'll learn the real stuff down the road. I might, I
Oh,
might.
yes. It's a
It would
huge
involve me talking
temptation.
to people and leaving the house. So that's a big, big sort of negative, but no, it's especially, gosh, when I was 20 years ago, absolutely, I would have been like, yep, I want to be a saucer spy. I would like to be a saucer spy and learn all the government secrets. What do I have to do? What lies do I have to tell? I think I think for some of us, that's pretty appealing.
Oh,
The
yes, it's
and
a
the
tremendous
you the
temptation.
whole. The whole notion of finally being an insider and having access is such a temptation. And I think there are some people in ufology and all over the world and things, but in ufology, I think there are some people who are desperate to be somebody
Yeah,
and
that's
are
true.
desperate to be part of the inner circle of people who know the truth or are fighting for the truth. And if it means that they prove that by investing in Tom DeLonge's company or by calling their member of Congress incessantly demanding more hearings or new legislation, they are part of a movement. And that is a powerful thing. You get enough people thinking they're on the path of justice and crusading for something important, and bad actors can manipulate that
Oh,
in various
absolutely.
ways.
Yes. And it's the same game being run again and again and again. And hey, look over there. We've got alien stuff. And even some people that I don't have the greatest credibility with me. And great, I'm blanking on his name, but you know it and I know it and everybody listening knows that the guy who worked at Area 51,
Lazar.
yeah, Bob Lazar. I have always thought that maybe he really believes what he's saying, and they put on a puppet show for him. They think of the experiences that could be created with the special effects Hollywood level. You can make people anything look like anything, and if you
Yeah.
just kind of see it, you're not supposed to see that. So forget about what you saw. But actually, we've made this whole presentation just for you to see it. And then we're going to pull it away and never talk about that. Okay. You didn't see anything. And really, your aliens are made out of plastic. And they're just, you walked past and saw alien corpses. Well, maybe you didn't. Maybe you saw what we wanted you to see so that you would be incapable of keeping that to yourself because we've already
Yeah.
psychologically profiled you and we know you're going to blab it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me show you this thing.
Or we're testing you. We want to see if you will talk. And if you
Yes.
don't talk, then we might bring you in for other stuff that's legit. I would not be, it would not shock me if something like that occurred, that Lazar and others who have come forward as whistleblowers If they were being tested, if they were being used as a conduit for misinformation, any of those sorts of things. Because I think that's a more logical conclusion to come to, as opposed to they are 100% correct about everything they saw, and that everything anybody told them was also 100% true. I think that's a tough ask, but I can buy the fact that some of these people might have been manipulated into telling a narrative for somebody else's benefit without knowing that's what they were doing.
Yes.
I think we've not just in the UFO field, but just in, intelligence services and propaganda and manipulation, long history of things like that. You leak stuff through people who don't know they're leaking stuff. And, it's sad. What's sad is when it like ends up ruining these people's lives.
Oh yes, what happened to Benowitz was
Yeah,
terrible.
it's awful. And he had, these tendencies to just go nuts and believe this stuff, and they just fed into it, right? They didn't, they could have just said, no, this isn't real. This isn't real. And by the time they did say that, Benowitz was like, nope, it is real. You're wrong. So
When they were
it's
doing things to simulate paranormal activity in this house,
Yeah.
and they gave him a special computer where the aliens can talk to you and things like that,
Yeah.
that it's tough to then pull back and say, no, we're just screwing with you. Forget about it. Because at that point, you're going to think that they're trying to shut you down because you
Yeah.
know too much.
Exactly. The computer thing is just fascinating to me. I think it was in Greg Bishop's book about it, or maybe Chris Lambright's book, but it
I
was
probably
suggest
remember rightly, but
yeah, and well before that, but there was a
okay.
suggestion that J. Allen Hynek might have been involved with some of that.
Wow.
Some of that it's sort of in the background, but it's sort of things that like one or two people have said with no not a lot of corroboration, but it's a sort of deep dark thing. And Go Reitley's book is amazing. He's taken that other stuff and built on it and talked to, I mean, he talked to Tal Levesque. I mean, that's just crazy to me that he's talking to these people, that these people would talk to him actually about all this stuff and the underground bases and the origins of all of those theories and, Dulce Base and all that. And oh, what's the guy, Phil Schneider, the whole Phil Schneider thing it's just this boy, the late 80s and into the 90s was just a wacky time
Yes, indeed.
for
Yes, indeed.
ufology and conspiracy stuff. Just an incredible time. I was gonna say, I wish I would have lived back then, but I did. So I was a
As did
little
I, as did I.
late to the party. I was a little young to be in on it firsthand, but I was there for sort of it was still bubbling when I sort of jumped into to learning about stuff.
That's kind of something I wanted to ask, Aaron. How did you get involved in all this?
Well, I remember reading a lot of books about UFOs at the library when I was a kid. I remember watching old episodes of In Search Of and
God,
sort
yes.
of, oh, it was the best, and sort of finding things out through that. And then when I was in high school, I think the book that really got me kind of into it and it sort of stuck was Howard Blum's Out There. Which were the first place I heard about the MJ-12 papers and all of that. And I thought that was fascinating. And then I think I was a senior in high school when the X-Files started. And
Oh,
so
man.
I was like, well, this is tying into some things that I've read about in the books, and this is really good. And then the next year I went off to college and had the internet for the first time, and I got on Usenet and was there in like alt.alien.visitors and alt.conspiracy. And that's where I encountered Bill Cooper's stuff and John Lear's stuff that at that time was only like 4 or 5 years old. So that was kind of my introduction to it. And I read a lot of those books, read all kinds of internet posts. I didn't really post much, but Usenet was hard for me to figure out. I could figure out how to read stuff, but configuring the server to be able to post things was ask your parents, kids, about Usenet. But yeah, that reading Omni magazine back in the day.
Omni magazine, hell yes. That
Yeah.
was such a touchstone for me.
It
Absolutely
was
fascinating.
it was and it, they the way they The way they blended the science, like the legit science stuff and the UFO stuff was, it made the UFO stuff look a lot more legit than it did if you just picked up a UFO magazine.
Oh
So
yeah.
it was really, really fun.
The
And then
magazine of science fiction and fact.
fact, yes.
And
And
it did mix those two in a unique way. There's never been another Omni magazine to my knowledge.
No, there's never been anything like it really before or since that did that kind of thing that well. My senior year of college, the history club, we brought David Jacobs to campus
Oh man.
to speak about his abduction research, and this is when actually none of my friends thought it was legit. They all made fun of me for even considering it. But it's like, this guy's a quack, isn't he? And like I was like, well, yeah, some of the stuff might be real. But no, my friends mocked me. But I started getting into contactees then and in college, reading some of those old books, getting my hands on that stuff. And then in grad school, when I was working on my master's degree, I needed a thesis topic, and it came down to UFO belief in the Cold War or Cold War pro wrestling, which would have been fun, but the stuff all went out
I'm
live.
only laughing because I totally was into pro wrestling in that same era.
Yeah.
And yeah, Colonel Krushkov or some, there'd always be the commie guy
Yeah.
who has a Russian name and, he's always fighting the American guy. It's like Rocky IV every week.
Yeah, Nikita Koloff and those guys. Yeah,
Boris Zukov,
Boris Zukov. Yeah,
yes.
and the problem is they're just for stuff from the 50s and 60s, especially. There's just not a lot of footage, especially back in 2000 or 2001 when I was doing this. So I ended up working on contactees and stuff for in grad school, and then just kept writing about it and eventually podcasting. And yeah, so it goes back to childhood. Yeah.
And I have to say, and this isn't just flattery, but the saucer life is absolutely fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
And you bring a degree of intellectual rigor that isn't always there in podcasts involving UFOs
Yeah.
and inject some critical thinking into this milieu that we work in that, is much needed, That maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just something normal,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. That's what I try to do, and try not to be like sort of arch skeptic kind of thing, because I don't think
No.
that's entertaining or fun. But some of this stuff is crap. Some of it's absolute crap. There's no way around it. But it's fun all the same until it gets somebody hurt or, well, I was going to say, or rip somebody off, but honestly, I think a lot of people allow themselves to get ripped off in flying saucer scams. And a lot of it isn't illegal. It's just if you pay somebody $1,500 for their course in contacting the aliens, you're going to get a course in contacting the aliens. That's a legit business transaction. It's
If you
not
buy
fraud.
Peter Popoff's holy water and drink it, well, then you got the holy water, right?
Exactly.
There's a certain limit between the victim, quote unquote, level of gullibility, and they did give you what you asked for, right? So, if it's not real, well, whose fault is that,
And there are actual scams out there,
Oh,
but
yes.
it's my favorite is the contactee Reinhold Schmidt,
I
who was
was going to bring him up if you didn't.
Reinhold Schmidt was back in the 50s and early 60s in Nebraska, was claimed he met these aliens, and they took him all over the place, and they showed him these extraordinary exotic mineral deposits up in Alaska, I think, and he started selling shares of a company to mine and refine these exotic materials, and he defrauded mostly little old ladies out of thousands of dollars, and ended up getting convicted of fraud and put in prison. And you can do a lot of things, you can get away with a lot of things, but the minute you use the post office or the telephones to do it, they've got you. The
The
whole wire
federal
fraud.
hammer's coming down, yes.
And Reinhold Schmidt is phenomenal because he made a movie. There's a movie about his contact experiences called Edge of Tomorrow, and it was lost forever, unavailable. Talking to somebody who was involved with some of those things, that basically it couldn't be released because the rights were so disputed. But all that was straightened out, and it was released as part of a box set, a Blu-ray box set of the films of Ron Ormond, who did these sort of,
Oh,
B movies.
yes, he's a character too.
Yes, this sort of like Mesa of Lost Women and movies like that, and Edge of Tomorrow, but also later did, I guess the best way to describe these films is if you've ever read one of those little Chick Tract comic books about
Oh,
the end of the
yes,
world.
Jack Chick,
Yeah, it's like a
hyper
movie.
evangelical, everybody's going to hell. I think most people have run across them because they're laid out randomly all over the place. And man, they're quite something.
They those and yeah the tracks are great, and Ormond's films are just it's intense. It's you don't want to laugh because they're being so earnest, but when the Cubans who have taken over America lop off the kid's head because he won't deny Christ, he's this fake head sort of bouncing into the ditch. That is it's just so good. But you can get that box set on Amazon. It's like $60, and it's got like 10 films in there. It's if you like obscure cinema and sort of, I don't even want to say outsider art, because like his sort of missionary films were seen by huge numbers of
Oh,
people.
probably millions, yeah.
Because they'd show them at revivals. I've never been to a revival. I assume they might have shown them at a, we're, I'm Lutheran. We don't do revivals. We do not
I
revivals.
have some experience that with the Jack Chick graphic
Oh.
novels, and yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
It's quite something.
it is, and I've been to the Jack Chick website. I think I've read every single tract they have available there. I finally got one in the wild. Somebody, hung it on our doorknob a couple months ago. It's like, I was so excited. I got a Jack Chick tract for real. I've only ever found like a couple other ones, and Reinhold Schmidt is a character, and he's not one that we hear much about anymore. He's not one of the big names.
What was his movie?
The Edge of Tomorrow.
And you're saying pretty much he got cheated out of an Oscar?
It was terrible, terrible, terrible miscarriage of justice. But It's
like him kind of sitting there telling the story. Is that?
it's very much narrated by him. Then there's some interactions with the supposed aliens on their spaceship, but it's been a while since I've seen it. I was able to get an unofficial copy to view when I was working on the episode through somebody who was involved in some of the Ormond stuff, and sort of very, very old VHS, like multi-generation old VHS. But there's a lot of scenes of no narration, no talking, just driving across Nebraska, and then like I went to the town, and then like he's driving through the town, like I saw something strange. It's very weird. Very, very cheesy, very, very Mystery Science Theater worthy.
I love that, by the way.
Me too. I'm a huge fan. Totally addicted. I just have it on in the background while I do stuff, just because I know all the jokes by heart.
To shift gears just a little bit, still talking about 1940s through 1960s contactees, which, if any, would you say had an experience that wasn't within their own head, or wasn't a grift, or wasn't mental illness, or something?
I think Orfeo Angelucci's experiences have always struck me as being just strange enough that he might have experienced something that was a legitimate experience. I don't know if it was an alien experience or anything, in quotes, paranormal, but something happened. He hears music on the ship. He's given this drink. They put a tablet into the ginger ale, and it dissolves, and he drinks it, and it's this like almost like a psychedelic experience that he has. And the books are well written, and the story changed slightly through various iterations, but the core of it was always there. So it's more like it was just being refined and things like that. But there's lots of elements of it that seem like somebody trying to put experiences that he can't understand into some sort of context that makes sense, rather than being a copycat of the George Adamski story, or a thinly disguised, plea to end nuclear war or something. Angelucci's seemed a bit. It's been a long time since I've read. I did an episode about it. If people want more
Oh
Angelucci,
yes, and it was a great one too.
it's his stuff just strikes me as weird. Not like weird, what a weird story, but this is. Something weird happened to this guy, and he worked at, oh, an aircraft plant,
A major one,
a
yes.
major one. I can't remember if it might be McDonnell Douglas. I'm, or maybe it was just,
That sounds right to me, yeah.
might just be Douglas at that point, but McDonnell Douglas or something like that. It feels almost like. This, I don't want to sound crazy. It feels not crazy, but it
It's a
feels
place to
almost
sound crazy. It's
like,
okay.
okay, good. It almost sort of struck me as he was being experimented on.
I was going to bring that up if you didn't, because that's the one that I really felt was a government psyop. That these guys who are in the service, by their appearance, take him to a bar and put a pill in his drink, and then the aliens show up. And it's like, yeah, that really seemed like an orchestrated performance and involved hitting him with psychedelics,
It really did, and it was right at the right time when the US government was partnering with universities and research labs here and in Canada to dose people with psychedelics to do all sorts of horrific MK Ultra type things. Because
Oh, absolutely.
yeah, so it, I mean, it fits the time period, it fits kind of, you know, it feels like a psyop. It really does. And I think he then wrote the book to try to cope with it in some way, or maybe he was encouraged to write the book. Maybe, you know, that was part of the plan, if there was a plan. So it's difficult to know, but that one's always jumped out at me as something with a kind of core of some kind of legitimacy to it.
Yes. One of the, and I only have heard of this recently, but fellow Strange Realities presenter, Ren Collier, has basically said that the Betty and Barney Hill incident was definitely a psyop. That just like everybody involved, other than Mrs. Hill, everybody was at some point involved in military intelligence or the CIA. And that it appears to be some sort of either experiment or disinformation, or it's an op. In some way, it's an op.
Yeah, it's much like we were talking about before with disinformation and misinformation. Some of these experiences, like the Hills, like the guy we were just talking about, whose name I or Angelucci
Angelucci?
or Orfeo Angelucci. I almost said Salvador Dali for some reason, but I don't know why.
Don't know what his deal was, but
Yeah, he might have been sampling some things as well. Yeah, I think it's a plausible explanation for some of these things that there might have been some kind of experimentation going on, some kind of psychological operation, something like that. Do we have absolute rock solid proof? No, but we don't have any proof it was an alien either.
Oh no.
So why not address all of the possibilities and think about all those possibilities? And honestly, the alien side of the story has had the stage for a long time. So it's fun to have, you know, ideas from people like Ren who are saying like, okay, well, this is a psyop. Let's look at what these people were involved in, you know, in previous parts of their lives and sort of connect some dots, because you know that stuff happened. We know that there were psychological operations that were far beyond the realms of any kind of ethics. We know that. We don't know that aliens and spaceships have been beaming people up to, you know, put implants in their noses and things. So I mean, it just hate to it's sort of cliched to say, you know, well, Occam's razor, but you know, there's some things that the attention on the UFO angle and the extraterrestrial angle could be serving as a smokescreen for. So,
That is
absolutely.
something I strongly consider, that with the special effects technology that we have, and with that, you know, Hollywood level special effects, and with hallucinogenics and other drugs, especially if people don't know they're receiving them, it would be really easy to create an experience that would be super realistic. One of your, my favorite of your episodes of The Saucer Life involves Millabs and a woman who, well, there were many people that have experienced military abduction. And she said that she was sexually assaulted by some sort of creature. And I can't recall which episode this is, but I'm thinking, you know, if somebody spikes your drink and hits you with hallucinogenics and then just dresses up in a really expensive suit, you know what I mean? That whole experience could have been done by regular people to other regular people, no aliens required, you know what I mean? And I suggest that not the sexual assault part, but a lot of things are just that, are productions that are put out, and literally anything can be fake these days.
Yeah, and imagine if, you know, the types of drugs that people have access to that would do that, you know, you can get from various avenues today. If people can get a hold of, you know, that kind of stuff, what might the elements of the government, you know, be able to have, or what chemicals might they have developed that could make somebody impressionable enough to, you know, believe they had experienced things that, you know, they might have just been laying on a table, you know, and just implanting those suggestions in their minds, with along with the suggestion that after a certain period of time they start talking to people about it, and maybe write a book or go on some podcasts and start spreading the story for whatever reason. And that's where a lot of,
Chemical-assisted hypnosis is totally a thing.
where it all falls apart for me is the why. You know, what is this being used to cover up? I'm not sure I want to know, because it might be fairly disturbing. But it's interesting to me that that there's just among the UFO oriented crowd, there seems to be so much resistance to terrestrial explanations, even ones that are slightly fantastical, like psyops or things like that. It's, you know, and I think it's because, you know, they've got this thing in their head that it's a belief system.
Yes, absolutely.
We've left behind searching for the truth about what people are seeing in the skies. And I think too many people and organizations are focused on, oh, you had this sighting? Let's prove that we can't prove what it is. Or if you know what I mean, let's emphasize that this is anomalous. And that's the focus. Because I mean, even among within like UFO friendly organizations and investigations, you know, the vast majority of sightings are, you know, identifiable once
Our
we,
headlights and things like
yeah,
that.
headlights or the International Space Station or something. But there's just that resistance to more or to non-alien explanations, even if those explanations are, you know, could be great things to discover and investigate, like secret research projects or something like that.
Well, yes. I mean, other than physical aliens driving nuts and bolts craft from another planet far away, there's a lot of other fascinating possibilities. You brought one up recently, Walter Bosley's, what his father told him. And I may have to refresh your memory. Do you know what I'm talking about?
That the Roswell craft and creatures were members of a civilization that was lost to human knowledge and sort of existing and evolving parallel to humanity, but with more advanced technology and things like that, but remaining hidden and secret, right? So
And like
it's
they
a,
live underground or something.
yeah, I think there's, you know, an element to hollow earthiness in it as well. And it's just I think that's a fascinating idea, and possibly, I mean, just as plausible as the extraterrestrial hypothesis, I think. Now that doesn't mean it's, necessarily likely, but it's one of those interesting things to sort of entertain in our collection of ideas about what might be going on, right? So
Absolutely.
yeah, we don't need to lock ourselves down to one explanation or another, because ufology isn't actually a science. It's not a field of study. It's just a sciencey sounding label that flying saucer buffs have given themselves. And it's playing dress up as science. And when really it's not. There's no peer-reviewed UFO journals. There's nothing.
It would be almost impossible to put something like that together.
Yeah, because you don't have actual evidence. If we had verifiable evidence that would stand up to scientific scrutiny, scientists really do enjoy making new discoveries, right? I mean, but no, there's a conspiracy, right? There's a conspiracy,
We
and there's
addressed that, and I thought it was really good that you did address that. Yes, academia may be slow to change, but there isn't some vast conspiracy among scientists and professors and, people who do research to stick to this particular. Now, there may be biases, but there aren't, it's not a conspiracy to make it the standard narrative. A lot
Right.
of scientists and academics would love it if something new was found and they could poke at it and explore it,
Yeah.
And I thought that was important to say.
Yes, absolutely. And it would be wonderful if aliens landed on the White House lawn and, said, "Take us to your leader," or something like that. But it's
Which would go horribly wrong, but
it would
whoever's
not be good.
president.
It would not be good. It would I've seen Independence Day. I know what happens. Can't trust them. But our friend Tim Banal says, show me the aliens, right? All this talk about disclosure, it's like, well, we have evidence, we got whistleblowers, just bring one out. Just show me. And then I'll get excited about it. But I mean,
And to me, if I just might butt in, but to me, the problem is with all the special effects and tech that we have, they could show you that and it might not be real. I could literally like do an autopsy in front of you and it might just all be fake.
heck, they did that in 1995, and it was
Yes,
fine,
yes, yes.
right? And that was not convincing at all. But at least I didn't think so back in 1995. But
Nor here.
they did have Jonathan Frakes narrating it, so that's okay. Yeah, I just think that you go on social media and you look at like the social media conversations on like Twitter or X or whatever about UFOs and the hashtag UFO Twitter. It is awful. It's awful. It is just shouting, and ufology's never been completely civil or anything like that. But now everybody's just arguing about, Department of Defense budget allocations and an office of this, that, or the other. And we've reached a point where the ufologists are getting excited at buying the story that the Air Force is giving them, which is, or the Defense Department or whatever. It's like, when did the government become the good guys in the UFO cover-up deal? It's just like, why are you, it's just, I don't know. I don't know. It's modern ufology is not fun for me. It's
No,
not
it is
enjoyable.
not serious,
And it's
it's
so
very
focused on
emotional, but it's not
it
really, there's
is.
no intellectual rigor, there's
No.
no critical thinking, there's a lot of emotion. That's what there is.
Yep. Because I think honestly, for some of these people, this is their thing. This is their identity in some cases.
Oh,
And
yes, absolutely.
which, it's kind of sad in some ways.
Well,
But
I think it would be shattering for them if all the disclosure happened. Like all branches of Congress, both branches of Congress, the president, the Supreme Court, everybody said, no, you have to tell us everything you know. Well, we've been lying to you for 70 years.
yeah.
That's what it is, man. There never were any aliens. We were just distracting you while we build some really cool stuff. And I think that would be hard for people to accept.
I think the cognitive dissonance would kick in, and they would simply say, this is another layer of the cover-up.
Yes,
And I
indeed.
think it would just keep going. It's difficult. And one of the things that gets me is the recent years have brought in so many new people interested in UFOs who have no awareness that the stuff people are talking about today is the same stuff people have been talking about for 70 years. Not a lot has changed. But it's like, oh, this is new. This is, have you heard about this? I'm like, yes, I heard about that in 1994. But it's nice. And then if you mention that things used to be, like this, or this had happened in that year, you're a gatekeeper, right? You're gatekeeping ufologist. No, I'm just saying there's a wider context here that you might not be getting. Now, I don't personally say that because I don't talk to those people on Twitter, because and I would cross the street to avoid them in real life, some of them,
Yes.
because I scary stuff. I'd rather deal with the aliens than some UFO people. But there's a lot of people doing interesting good work out there,
Oh, yes.
but you have to look, because the signal to noise ratio out there is pretty out of whack.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Hey. Just to shift a little bit, this is a podcast devoted to the paranormal. So I have to ask, doing the copious research that you've done for many years, what's some of the weirdest stuff you've ever found?
Weirdest stuff. That's a good question. I think one of the weirdest things to me is how the Men in Black thing evolved from one story about one guy to other examples of people in black hushing up UFO researchers, to elements of it having paranormal aspects to it, like the Men in Black might be aliens themselves, to this cultural phenomenon with comic books and role-playing games and eventually a movie.
And a killer episode of the X-Files.
Yes, Jesse Ventura and Alex Trebek. That was outstanding. Because it's one of those things where the weirdness of it to me is just how this it just sort of snowballed. Because it was Al Bender and Gray Barker and the IFSB closing down, and Bender saying he got too close to the truth, and then Barker trying to figure out what happened to Bender and writing this book about his friends' attempts to figure this out. And looking at the correspondence between Barker and Bender and all those people in the archives, the book's pretty accurate as to who said what when about the Men in Black. But then it just becomes part of the lore. And in a way that if I was being sort of strange about it, you might say that it literally sort of came to life out of these narratives and became something, almost like a, I hate the word, use the word meme, but almost like this almost a self-aware idea that just sort of propagated
I
itself.
thought you were going to say Tulpa.
Tulpa, no, I'm not going to say Tulpa. I'm not. But that's one of the weirdest things to me is that the Men in Black, it just grows into this sort of unstoppable juggernaut to the point where people don't really realize a lot of times that you can trace this back to one incident and to one story, because they've gone back into the history and see, well, this phenomenon has existed throughout time, and Nick Redfern can write books about men and women in black, and it just all blossoms in a strange way. Other weird thing, like really weird stuff. I think some of the Milab stuff is very strange and very creepy. Especially Leah Haley, her experiences, thinking she was abducted, writing books about her abduction, then coming to the realization that she was abducted and things happened, but it wasn't aliens. It was humans. It was elements of the military or intelligence services. And in her books and presentations out there on YouTube and stuff, it's fascinating to see the sort of progression and development and sort of dawning realization that what you thought happened was not what happened. And in fact, what happened might be more disturbing, much more disturbing, because her experiences with the aliens were not necessarily bad. She wrote that kid's book, Sito's New Friends, which, and the thing is, okay, yeah, I Sito's New Friends. The thing is, I think I said this on the show, the book itself is pretty innocuous. Like, just the text is pretty innocuous, but the illustrations, which were not done by Haley, the illustrations are just this uncanny valley type of thing where it's disturbing. The pictures make it look far more disturbing than just the words would. And I think the book's gotten a bad rap. That was one of the most bizarre things sort of come out of ufology, is Sito's New Friends and the accusation that that Haley was encouraging parents to let their kids get groomed by the aliens and things like that. It was, it was a wild time. The 90s were a wild time
Yes,
in
indeed.
ufology.
Yes, indeed.
They really were. Things have been boring since then. Nothing but disclosure lately. Disclosure's boring. Give me creepy illustrated kids' books about aliens.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the Men in Black, because that's, to me, one of the most fascinating subgenres of this thing we're talking about, absolutely fascinating to me how many people have had some kind of experience with that. And I think it's a huge umbrella under which our actual government agents, who are just what they purport to be, also people pretending to be government agents because they're UFO investigators and they want to flash some thing and get people to talk to them. And then it gets really weird from there. And it's inter I've always been fascinated with the Men in Black, that they're supposedly silencing people and telling them not to talk about it, but yet people talk about it and don't seem to pay any penalty. And it kind of makes me seem like, is this reverse psychology? Is this, we're going to confirm that you saw something very strange and tell you not to talk about it, or you're going to pay for that. But they never pay for it, And that seems like a psyop. But I think there's a whole bunch of people of different sorts under the umbrella. And frankly, I think a lot of UFO, would be UFO researchers put on a suit and tie and had a flashy business card from the International Flying Saucer Investigation, whatever, and went out and just tried to get some witness statements and implied they were with the government when they were not, and but didn't actually say they were with the government. And then other people have had really weird encounters. I'm thinking of this is I am not no I'm just off the top of my head. I'm thinking of a college professor from Canada who was in a library on the campus and was approached by a man in black type person who asked what he thought about UFOs. And he said, "I don't really care about UFOs." And the guy starts yelling at him that this is the most important issue in today's world. You must care. And everything's like, what the hell? And he mentioned that the entire library was silent at that time. It was just him and that guy. Does this sound familiar?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
This is
Okay. Because
strange.
it, and I should have Googled who the hell that guy was, but he went on to study UFOs, and he, this guy was very confrontational and very, no, this is really important. You have to look into this. And it changed his life. And he said it was very much a not a normal experience. Now, the guy looked like a normal human being. And, there was nothing overtly impossible there. But it was a very intense and very weird experience.
It would be. It would be. I've been accused of being a man in black.
Really? No, you gotta tell me that one, man.
So it was 1996. I was a field investigator for the UFO Investigation Agency, or UFOIA. I was Strategic Investigation Team 1310. This is an organization run by a guy named Randolph B. Warnke out of I think Washington State. So I got a little card and I pasted my picture on it and everything. And it was the summer of 96, and there was a crop circle in near my house, or a couple townships over. And so my friend and I, the Simpson J. Hanover the third, the associate producer of The Saucer Life, he and I hopped in the car and went out there to check out the crop circle. And we we had some fun with it. I wore like a tweed jacket and tried to look professional, and he wore like this trench coat, and was he built this device out of like a one of those slide projectors that just show you just put one slide in, those sort of old-fashioned things,
Oh,
and then like
yes.
a Black and Decker snake light was attached under it, and then a long metal rod with a cork at the end. And he said it was the paranormal energy detector. And so
Oh, my God.
we get to the field where the crop circle is, and it's got police tape around it and everything. It was in the paper though, so people were milling around. So he's walking along the edge of the ditch, looking through this thing and calling out numbers, and I'm repeating the numbers into a tape recorder. Just nobody's paying attention to us, and people eventually leave, and we're still hanging around. A guy comes up on a four-wheeler, and he's like, "You know, they say it's a hoax because there's a cigarette in the middle of it. Well, that was my cigarette. I was out there looking at it at 4 o'clock this morning, and it's no hoax. But you know that, don't you? You know all about that. I know what you're here for." And we're like, we're just on break and just having fun. He's like, right. Now you expect me to believe that? I got a stack of magazines this high. I know what you guys are like. I know what you guys
Oh,
are.
man.
I'm not gonna give you my name or anything." And they drives off, and we're freaked out. And then this van shows up with, I swear, a bunch of hippies get out of it, like the lavender tinted glasses and everything. And they're telling us that the energy in the crop circle is in the center, so they would be happy to take our sensing device into the center to get some readings. And we're like, no, it's a prototype. So we're not even sure it works. But this woman said that she knew all about crop circles from the class she took at college on crop circles. So at that point, we thought we should leave. But the great thing was that this was all, my tape recorder was in my pocket, still going through all of this. And we played the
Oh
tape for
man.
people and it was fun. I have no idea where the tape is now. It's gone. It's vanished. It's one
Man,
of,
what I wouldn't give to hear that.
I know it was the best. I remember like for my wife and I really knew each other. She was in a group of people we were playing the tape for. She remembers it now. She's like, oh yeah, the crop circle tape. That was hilarious. But yeah, that was, but yeah, this guy assumed that we were government agents because honestly, that's probably what he was expecting to find.
Oh, yes.
And so these people fit the bill because you know, a 20-year-old and a 21-year-old dressed for winter in just for autumn in July in Indiana, yeah, that these seem like people who would know what they're doing, right? Yeah, we did not look like we looked like dorks,
I
but no.
think that probably has happened, though, a number of times. Like a large number of times.
Yeah.
And some of the Mothman prophecy weird people that show up and harass witnesses are probably doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hoaxing. I think there's a lot of just having fun with people, or not hoaxing and not harassing, but it's just interpreted as harassment by the person
Oh,
being
yes. No, they're really sincerely looking for the story.
And there was one. I think I read about it in a Brad Steiger book at one point, but there was something where somebody had put the word out to not talk to Brad Steiger, and it was basically like you know, other UFO investigators were pretending to be sort of government officials to tell
Wow.
him don't talk to him about this because they didn't want him to steal their scoop because he wrote like a book every 3 weeks or whatever.
I was gonna say, yeah, he wrote
Back in the
about
day.
50 books
Yeah,
easily.
so he would have a new book out before like these guys would have their newsletter out probably. So yeah, don't talk to Steiger about this. Yeah, it was the whole Men in Black thing is really fascinating because it's right on that, you know, there are paranormal elements to some of the stories, but most of the time it's just very sort of it's saucery, but also conspiratorial, but also a little paranormal. It's an interesting sort of part of the landscape.
Absolutely. And I will share this. I've mentioned it before on the podcast, but when I started doing this in very rudimentary ways, I started this podcast and unfortunately I didn't know anything about electronics and it was just getting going. And the weirdest thing happened. I was never confronted by any individuals, but these black SUVs that look exactly like unmarked federal agents' cars showed up outside my house, like
Wow.
across the street, shining their headlights into my kitchen window for like an hour,
Wow.
And I'm like, I really sincerely thought, am I under investigation for something? I'm not doing anything. I mean, I don't do anything illegal. There's nothing going on here. Is somebody around me under investigation? And why are you shining that in my kitchen window? And I don't know if you've ever heard me mention this before, but at one time I got kind of fed up because, it's not pleasant to have a black SUV that looks just like a federal agent's car, parked across the street. Now, the street was a four-lane divided highway, so it's not that close,
Right.
but it's close enough, And at some point, They've been shining in my kitchen window, and I didn't have a gun. This was not there. I didn't. There's no real guns involved, okay? But I made my finger in the shape of a gun, like if you've ever seen the movie Gran Torino, what Clint Eastwood does. You just, very basic. Point my index finger, and I pointed out the window, and I made a gesture like I was firing a gun, and it took off instantly. And so the person must have been watching me. I mean, there's no way they really couldn't be, you know? And I was like, who the hell would be watching me? And there were never any, I never had any legal problems or anything like that. And it just happened, you know? And it happened right as I was getting this podcast going. And it happened repeatedly. And I mean, like, I'd say a couple dozen times that I at least experienced the black SUV and the shining through the window. And there were just black SUVs around. And it was so weird.
That
And I
is,
legitimately thought I might be under some sort of investigation for something, but nothing ever came of anything. And then we moved and it never happened again. But it was just really weird.
that.
And it was a bizarre experience, and nothing paranormal per se happened, but something happened. I don't know what it was, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you'll probably never know,
I know, I doubt I'll ever know.
what that was. I mean, people have asked me, have you ever been like targeted or told to or hushed up or anything? No, I talk about old contactees. Sometimes I wonder do I wish that somebody would try to intimidate me just so I could have that experience? But no, I don't think that would be really very fun at all.
No.
No, it'd be very scary.
I'll be honest, I'd fold up like L. Bender in a second.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's like
I'm not trying, you know, I'll
we don't want you
go
to
talk about
talk about
something
this.
else.
Okay. Yeah, it's they can make people disappear,
I don't want to put you on the spot, Aaron, but if you don't mind, you did have something happen to you one time, didn't you?
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird. It's sort of very related to the Men in Black, right? I was down in West Virginia a couple of years ago at Point Pleasant, and I was driving around the TNT area, or McClintock Wildlife Refuge now, but it had been the TNT area. I was poking around in those big dome-like bunkers and things like that, and
Which are still there, which is
yeah,
amazing to me.
it's they're really really cool and kind of scary.
Oh, yeah.
Don't go
I'd be
by
wor more
yourself.
worried about coming across some junkie who's hanging
Yeah.
out inside. Oh.
Absolutely. That because they're very dark. Once you get past like where the light sort of enters the door. Anyway, I was driving down a dirt road sort of through this area, and I noticed a car behind me, and I could tell that it was black, a black sedan sort of thing, and it was a really narrow road, so I wanted to, look around. I wasn't driving very fast, so I pulled off on a side road and let them pass, and then I kept going, and then they sort of did the same thing to get behind me again, and so I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this again and see what happens, and so I'm behind them. They go over a little hill, I go over the little hill. And there's no car there. There's no car, and there was nowhere for them to turn off. There wasn't a there was a curve up ahead, but they couldn't have been going fast enough to have reached that and gotten out of sight. And when I think back, I can't recall anything about the person driving it. I can't recall what state the license plate was. It's and I was paying attention to it. It wasn't just like, you see a car drive by and you don't notice who's in the driver's seat. I was paying attention to it. So I don't know what that was. If it was just my brain playing a trick on me, or but it was strange, and it kind of freaked me out. I'd never really had anything paranormal happen to me, I'd go on ghost hunts, and I'd be at the ghost hunt, and people are like, "This is weird. You know, we've always had ghosts here, but not tonight." It's like, yeah, I'm ghost repellent. You know, they don't show
Still
up around.
avoiding you.
Yeah, they are. But that was strange. That was strange. I'm not
And
sure.
certainly Men in Black adjacent, if not
Yeah.
actual agents showing up to talk to you, but sending you a message, you might say, of
Yeah,
something, but what the message was, I have no idea, you know?
or my brain was in total Point Pleasant mode and decided to have some fun with a different part of my brain or something.
And some
But
old
it
timer
was,
is also just out driving his Cadillac,
yeah, some old lady who wasn't tall enough to be seen over the back of the seat when I was behind her. It's like, yeah, which is probably what it was. And there might have probably was a turnoff I didn't see that they turned on, but I don't think so. I
always in
think,
that gray area where it doesn't, you can't prove anything.
yeah, I can't. No, there's
Even if you had a
no.
dash cam, it wouldn't really probably prove anything, you know?
No, I mean, as with most weird encounters, the dash cam would mysteriously stop working, right when you need to check the footage in that particular area. So, yeah, very, very strange happening, a little disturbing. As soon as it happened, I did sort of send messages to some people, sort of while it was fresh in my mind. Yeah, it's kind of neat, actually. Since nothing bad happened, and you know, I haven't had like recurring nightmares, and it hasn't happened again. I'm just saying, that's my sort of paranormal experience that I've had. But
Yes, and
yeah.
once it stopped happening, it was all kind of over and done with. The SUV thing doesn't bother me. No, thank God it stopped, but
Yeah.
it is kind of in just in my pocket, like, wow, that was a weird, weird time there for a minute, you
Yeah.
know? And
Yeah.
I'll never know the answer, you know?
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks a lot for being here tonight, Aaron. I really
No
appreciate your
problem.
time.
No problem.
Really enjoyed talking about this stuff with you. Do you want to tell the audience where they can find you and find your books and stuff?
Yeah, you can find the podcast anywhere you find podcasts. You can also go to saucerlife.com, and that has all the episodes and links to books I've written about UFOs and other things. So that's basically the place to go. I'm on Twitter, but I'm not on Twitter, you know. So it's sort of, you know, don't bother with that.
I'm not on Twitter at all, so yeah.
Strongly considering getting off Twitter in the new year. Yeah, so that's where I am, saucerlife.com.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much for being here tonight. We're going to do a Patreon for the Patreons. But for everyone else, thank you for listening. As always, thank you for listening. And good night.